Welcome to the March 6, 2024 meeting of the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board in Clark County. Just a reminder for all of you that are participating, this meeting is being audio recorded and will get uploaded to the county website if you want to go back and revisit what we talked about this evening at our meeting. So thank you for being here with us this evening. Does anybody have any community input?
I just want to announce that I'm sure you all know this, but we're having an employment rally at Clark College on, what is the date, Emily? Is it March 19th?
March 19th.
There you go. And we should all be there to support them.
Darla, is there a, because I noticed it's an all-day long event, is there a marquee time that would be better to attend than if it's not, like, in the car to be there all day?
I'm not sure. Does anyone else know?
I could connect you with someone who's on the planning committee, and I also know that there's a virtual option as well.
Okay. I'll put the link to register in the chat, that if you go there, it should have, you know, kind of more information for you. And I just got a confirmation that I'm looking for right now. The agenda, well, depends on what you might want to be there for. The rally itself, I think, which is where we might go out and, like, wave signs around, is from 12:15 to 1 p.m. There's some history and employment stories in the morning, discussions and breakouts, and call to action in the afternoon. So if there's, you know, particular parts of that that are interesting to you that you want to attend for part of it, then please join. And I'll put, like I said, I'll put the registration in the chat. Thank you. All right. And so I am pleased to say that actually joining us this evening is Kayla Greenland from CTRAN, and she's going to do an update on their services. She is actually in the room down at the county building. And so,
Kayla, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
If you want to do a quick introduction, what your role is at CTRAN, and then share with us all the amazing things that are going on.
Oh, good.
Thanks. Welcome.
Thank you guys for having me. We're excited to be here tonight and share more about our services with you.
Can you speak closer to the mic?
Yes.
And then did you share a screen after you pulled that up?
No, I apologize.
No, don't apologize. It's okay.
We are getting used to it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And then the green share screen. Oh, sorry. I might be left mousing on you and tracking you.
Oh, no, what just happened? And Lori just is in the waiting room.
I'm not managing the waiting room.
Oh, good.
Somebody else is.
Okay.
I'll hit it though, just because I'm there. Okay. So let's see. Did that work? Can you guys see the screen? Okay. And then you can
speak into the mic.
We can see it.
Yay. All right. Is that better? All right, so we're going to go over a little CTRAN 101 this evening. We're going to go through all the basics of the services that we offer. So starting out, I'll tell you guys about our service area. We have a local service here in Clark County. We also offer regional service to Portland, which includes the Delta Park MAX station and Parkers MAX station, as well as PDX. And then we offer express service to downtown Portland and Markham Hill, which includes OHSU and the Portland VA. And we are open 365 days a year. We have three primary types of service. The first is fixed route, which is our regular bus service that most people are familiar with. Those buses stop at the bus stops you'll see around the county. And then we have C-Van paratransit service, and that is for people who are unable to ride fixed route due to a physical or cognitive disability that prevents them from riding it. And we pick passengers up from their home, as long as it's within the service area, and take them where they need to go. And then the third is the Current, and that is our demand response rideshare service, also called microtransit, and that's similar to Lyft and Uber. And then for accessibility, all of our vehicles are lift equipped, so that includes the Current vehicles, C-Van vehicles, and fixed route vehicles. We also offer free straps to place on wheelchairs for folks who need them to secure their device to prevent damage. Service animals, of course, are allowed on our buses. The driver may ask what service they perform, and then emotional support animals are allowed to ride in a pet carrier. We have audio stop announcements on board at major time points, and free travel training is also available for folks who need it. So we can have someone actually meet with you and walk you through whatever trip you need, whether you just need to get comfortable or aren't familiar with the service at all. And for fares, I won't get too in the weeds with this one, but we have a few different fare categories. We have Adult, Honored, Youth, Reduced, and then Heroes, which would be for active duty military or veterans. And we also offer an education opportunity pass for students at Clark and WSU, and that's actually a free fare. And similarly, Youth Fare is free. That was something that the state of Washington did, the year before last, I'm not positive, but youth ride for free, 18 and under. And then that honor fare, that is for folks who are 65 or older or who have a disability, receiving state benefits like Hoover Medical. So any of these special fare types, basically anything outside of regular adult fare, do require ID cards, and people can get those at any C-Tran customer service office, which includes the Vancouver Mall, our new Mill Plain Transit Center out in East Vancouver, and our administration office. And we have different fare types for local, regional, and express routes like we talked about earlier, so depending on where you're going, the fare will be different. And as far as payment methods, we partner with TriMet to offer HOP electronic fare. So that is a card that you tap when you board, and the card itself is $3, but once you have it, you don't have to buy another one unless you need to replace it or something. So you pay the initial $3, and then you load whatever cash amount you want onto the card. And each time you tap, it takes off the appropriate amount of fare and will cap you out at the price of the day pass or monthly pass, depending on how often you ride, so that way you're not overpaying. And then for C-Van, for example, you can load a monthly pass on there. The reduced one is a little bit different. That's the only one you have to go in person to purchase at one of our sales offices. That's it about fares. So going back to the different service types, we'll start with fixed route. So again, that one's pretty basic. We have local routes here in Clark County. We have those regional routes that go to the MAX stations. And then we have the express routes that go to downtown Portland and Markham Hill. And those buses, they kind of look like the one in the photo. That could be one of our regular 40-foot buses, or if you've seen those large bendy buses, the articulated buses that bend in the middle, those are fixed route as well. And C-Van, our paratransit service, is an application-based service. Like I said, for folks who are unable to use fixed route due to physical or cognitive disability, people can travel anywhere within the service area. It's not based on trip tech, so it doesn't have to be to a doctor's appointment, for example. You could go to your friend's home, grocery store, wherever you need to go, as long as it's within the service area. And that service area extends about 3/4 of a mile from our regular fixed route service area. C-band passengers are all allowed to bring one personal care attendant with them to assist them on their ride. And that C-band fare is the same as our local adult fare or the regional adult fare if folks are traveling to one of our three connection points in Portland, which include Jansen Beach and then those two MAX stations at Delta Park or Park Rose. All C-band rides are booked 1 to 2 days in advance. Passengers let us know what time they need to be at their destination or what time they want to leave. And there is a minimum 45-minute stay at each location. And each ride, you have a 30-minute pickup window. So, for example, if you say you want to leave home around 10, we might pick you up as early as 9:30, or we might pick you up as late as 10:30, depending on where you're at in that window. And for the application process for C-band, first folks fill out a pre-application that is available online, or we can mail it out. Once we receive the pre-application, we can email a full application or, again, mail it out. If we need additional information after we receive that full application, we might schedule a phone interview to kind of go over some more questions. And then if we still need more information, we'll meet with folks for an in-person functional assessment where we sit down and talk with them about what they may and may not be able to do as far as writing fixed route goes. And then if folks are approved, we do recertification depending on what you're approved for. So it could be 6 months down the line if it's a temporary disability, or it could be a couple years down the line if it's something more permanent. And, of course, everyone is very different in what their needs are for transportation. So some folks have full service and are able to ride it anywhere within the service area. Some folks are able to use fixed route under certain conditions. So they would be approved for what's called conditional service. So that way they are using fixed route for the trips they're able to, but they have C-band available to them when they need it. We also have what's called a shopping shuttle, and that takes folks from select senior living facilities here in downtown Vancouver to grocery stores in Hazeldale. So the locations that we service are Esther Short Commons, Smith Tower, Lewis and Clark Plaza, and then Van Vista, Vista Court, and Columbia House. And depending on the location, that would either be the first and third Tuesday of each month or the second and fourth Thursday. Everyone has a 60 to 90 minute shopping window for those trips, and they would be charged either adult local fare or honored local fare if they're eligible, or they can use a C-band pass. And each passenger is allowed to bring a small shopping cart, or they can have up to 4 bags per person. And again, the current is our demand response microtransit service. And there are 5 service areas. We service La Center and Richfield, that one's combined. And again, WSU, Vancouver, Salmon Creek is combined. Then we have the Port of Vancouver, Rose Village, Kamiskamishugal. So this map is pretty small, but you kind of get the idea that there are these 5 different service areas. So when you schedule a trip on the current, you need to begin and end in the same service area. The Port of Vancouver is a little bit unique. We do have a few service stops outside of that outlined service area. So, for example, you could catch the current for the Port of Vancouver at Broadway and Evergreen, and you could take it to the Amtrak station in that service area. And those fares are the same as our local routes. You can schedule the rides online by phone or through the current mobile app. And you can schedule same-day rides, or you can schedule 1 to 2 days in advance. And all of the service areas operate from 5:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, and then all areas except for the port run on weekends from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. We also have a mobile app called Transit, and that is our mobile trip planning app. It gives folks real-time arrival information and a vehicle location feed, so you can see how far away your bus is. It also offers trip planning, included integrated trip planning with TriMet and other agencies. So for example, you might be in another city, even like Tucson, and you can use your transit app there, which is pretty nice. And they also include rider alerts for stop closures, different events like runs and stuff like that, or parades, weather impacts, and that sort of thing. C-Tran has a board of directors, of course, and is comprised of 9 elected officials representing our local government within the C-Tran service area, and then we have 1 non-voting labor representative from C-Tran, and that would be 2 Clark County councilors, 3 City of Vancouver council members, 1 member each from the cities of Camas, Washougal, and Battleground, and then 1 member representing Ridgefield, the center, and Yackel. And that membership is kind of based off of the number of folks from those areas who use our service. They provide policy and legislative direction for the agency. And if you want to tune in for a board meeting, there are a few different ways you can do it. You're as welcome to join us in person. We also stream them on Facebook or CBTV. And then you can also follow along on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it nowadays. Everyone is welcome to give public comments too, so you can come and do that in person, or if you want to give public comments online, you just need to reach out to us by noon the day of the meeting to do that. And those meetings are the second Tuesday of every month, typically at 5:30. This month, for example, though, it is canceled. We have a lack of agenda items, so don't come for March. But April, we'll be back again, but on the third Tuesday of April, so kind of weird 2 months there. We also have a Citizens Advisory Committee, so C-Trans Citizens Advisory Committee, or CCAC, and that's made up of 15 representatives from different demographics here in the county. So we have 3 at-large representatives, bi-state commuter, business, C-MAN, deaf, hard of hearing, developmentally disabled rider, environmental community, fixed route, low-income social services, school systems, senior citizen, student youth, and blind low vision. That was a lot, but we try to make sure that all groups are kind of represented and have an equal voice in that. And that group makes recommendations to the C-Tran board and provides the board with quarterly updates on their activity. So for example, sometimes they'll do a subcommittee. Like we had a subcommittee last year to update the bylaws, and that's something they would provide in their quarterly update, or they would just let the board know what kind of presentations they have received from C-Tran staff or outside agencies. Each CCAC member, they can serve up to 2 consecutive terms, and those terms are each 2 years, so it'll be up to 4 years altogether. Applications are submitted in the summer, and we do interviews in October for that. And those meetings are the last Thursday of every month at 5:30, and that's in our boardroom at our administration building. And those meetings are also open to the public, and public comment is welcome at those meetings as well. As far as what we have going on right now at C-Tran, we have a couple of exciting things. We have our long-range transit plan in works. So that is a plan intended to guide us through to 2045. We're looking at existing conditions and prioritizing improvements over the next 20 years. So we're looking for what our community wants to see, basically. It's our community service, so we need to know what they want. And right now we're in the public engagement stage. We're hosting multiple open houses through the county during March and early April. And we also have an online open house available now through April 5th for folks to leave comments. The other big thing we have going on is our bus rapid transit lines. So we have 2 existing BRT or bus rapid transit lines. That would be the Vine on 4th Lane, which opened in 2017. That runs from downtown Vancouver to the Vancouver Mall Transit Center. And then we have the Vine on Mill Plain, which opened last October. And that goes from downtown Vancouver to the Mill Plain Transit Center on Mill Plain and 184th. And now we have 2 new BRT lines in progress. We have the line on Highway 99, which will run along Highway 99 from Salmon Creek to downtown Vancouver. and then the line on Fourth Plain Extension. So that will run from the Vancouver Mall Transit Center where the current line on Fourth Plain ends, and it will head out east, and it will either terminate at Mill Plain Transit Center or Fisher's Landing Transit Center on 164th, depending on what public input is. We're still in the planning stages of that. And both of those lines are expected to open in 2027, so we'll be busy over the next few years. Other than that, we're more than just a bus company. We participate in community events as well. So we do a lot of parades. For example, the Ridgefield 4th of July Parade, the Washougal Lighted Christmas Parade, Veterans Day Parade here in downtown Vancouver. We also participate in multiple Pride events here in Vancouver and Portland each June. We participate in the Juneteenth Freedom Celebration in downtown Vancouver. That started a few years ago, and that is fun events. We have a booth at the Clark County Fair where you can come up, ask us questions. We also provide shuttle service to that, so that's a good way to get to the fair and not have to struggle with parking. And then we'll participate in different community events like hiring events and resource fairs. We also have partnerships with the Ridgefield Raptors baseball team, and we recently began a partnership with the Vancouver Volcanoes basketball team. That was all I had for you. Do you have any questions? Yes, Gabrielle.
Hi. Sorry, I was late. I was driving back from Seattle. I would like to know if CTRAN is making a special plan for the I-5 bridge replacement. I know that it should take people back and forth, and if you plan to raise the rate or anything that you would like to share about that. Thank you.
Gotcha. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about fare differences, and honestly, I don't have any information on that interstate bridge replacement or IBR project at this time. We're one of many partners on that project, so I don't know that they really have anything super set in stone right now, but that is a really good question. So once we get a little bit closer, we'll have more information, of course.
And of course, I have a following question. Do you know if CTRAN is providing any kind of funding for the bridge replacement?
Gosh, I actually don't know that either. I apologize. But if you want, I can get your contact information, and I can find out, and I can follow up with you.
Yeah, that would be great.
Perfect. Yes, Amy.
Thank you so much for your presentation. I learned so much about CTRAN that I didn't even know, and it made me think about how, I know there's an app, but, and I'm sure there are communities that you're sharing more broadly in, but how do people find out about CTRAN? Like what outreach do you do, but how do you find that people come to you to get information? And then I actually have a second question that's unrelated, but I'll tell you both so you can think about it. And then your community advisory board, how do you ensure diversity and diverse representation in the advisory board? Specifically, I'm thinking about individuals with intellectual or developmental disabilities participating fully in your advisory board work. So how do you do that too?
Yeah, both good questions. Gosh, let me think. So with the, I'll touch base on the CTRAN Citizens Advisory Board first. So that process is application based, right? So we get the applications, and once we receive all the applications, we look at all the positions that people applied for, and then we'll put them in groups and interview them. So actually with the interview process, they interview with the committee, and the committee members decide. So we do have a developmentally disabled rider representative position. So right now, that's filled. We try to make sure that all positions are filled, of course, but that is a set position that we have. So outside of that, I can't really say that there's anything super specific that we do, but that's kind of how the interview process works, right? I'm sorry, can you repeat your first question?
How do people find out more about C-TRAN?
Yes, thank you. We do have a few different social media platforms that we're active on, so you know that doesn't cover everyone, but we try to make sure that we're active on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X, Reds. We're trying Blue Sky Social. There's nothing really going on there yet, but at least trying to reach as many people as we can. And then, gosh, I think that a lot of networking like this really helps us. Sometimes we'll have a specific question that we go to a different group with, and we'll reach out to them and make connections that way. We partner with different groups like Community in Motion for funding for different things, for example. So outside of the social media realm, I guess, that would be another big way that we do things.
Awesome. Yeah. Great. This is it. Oh, yeah. Network.
Yeah, so Hattie Stigham looked like she wants to ask a question.
Hi, Hattie.
Hi. It's been so long, I couldn't remember my question for a second. I was wondering, I saw something on Facebook about a 40-year visioning plan reading for C-TRAN, and I went to find it so I could share it with some people, and I haven't been able to locate it. I'm just wondering if you
could
touch on that a little bit, and then maybe send the link over or tell me where I can find that.
Yes, absolutely.
Just put a link in the chat that talks about the C-TRAN 2045 planning.
Okay, perfect.
So you might check that out to see if that's what you were looking for. I'm sure that was.
Yes, awesome. And if you needed to find it, again, it is on the front page of our website. There's a big box there that says, C-TRAN 2045. So, sorry, I'm probably using that interchangeably with the long-range plan, but that's what that long-range plan is. It's our 2045 plan to guide us over the next 20 years.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's really hard to see
that. So, that looks like a lot of those.
2045.
I can come look at it.
Could we hear what the question was in the room?
Yep.
Gabriella is sharing her cell phone and asking us if what she's showing is what we were talking about.
You want me to stop sharing?
I think I can just do it. There, so this is the front page of the C-TRAN website, c-tran.com, and then it's this 2045 planning. Is that right, Kayla?
Yes, that is correct. And we have a virtual open house for that. And then we also have a virtual open house below that for that fourth main extension ERT. And with the long range plan, I should say at this point, it's really open-ended. So once we gather feedback, we'll probably have some more pointed questions for folks. We're going to be doing onboard surveys, for example, with passengers. So we're still in the pretty early stages, so it's wide open for whatever comments people have. Angela?
Hi, Kayla. Thanks for being here. I had a quick question about C-band services. We have some individuals that don't really, I'm not sure, and maybe you covered this and I was taking attendance, I didn't hear, what the route or if there's a fixed area that C-band serves. And we're finding that there are individuals that live outside of that and are having a difficult time accessing transportation
to engage in services that they've been referred to and that are going really well. And so that really impacts their ability to be active in their community and participate in things. And I just wonder, are there other programs that CTRAN supports that can go outside of their kind of service area if they have a paratransit need? Is that something you guys are looking at? And what are the parameters in terms of like the CVAN service area?
Yeah, good question. So as far as other services, the one that we usually recommend to people is pretty specific, and that's medical transportation. I believe it's Community in Motion who operates that one. Outside of that, I don't really know of any other programs who would do that specifically, but we're always, again, taking comments. So if there's a specific area that someone lives at that isn't serviced, if they can comment and let us know. It doesn't mean, you know, it's going to happen tomorrow necessarily, but the more feedback we get, you never know what could happen in the future. And as far as living outside of the service area, of course, the options are limited. If folks can get into the service area, then we can pick them up and take them where they need to go. But often, that is part of the challenge, too. They don't necessarily have a way to even get into the service area. And as far as how we determine that service area, that is within 3/4 of a mile from our fixed route service. So anywhere there are fixed route buses covered, we would have CVAN service within a 3/4 mile radius around that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Yeah.
And so with the travel trainees, if somebody is in need of that service, I'm assuming they would go to the website or use the app to make a request. Is that the way that that is done?
They would actually want to call us for that. So, and I should say with the app, it's not an app that you would find other CTRAN information on. Is solely for trip planning and seeing when your bus is going to arrive. And on the website, we do have our contact information listed and that sort of thing. But if you call us at our general number, that would be the easiest way to do it, and they can put you in touch with a travel trainer and get that scheduled.
Okay, and then second question is about, you talked about the educational opportunity pass for college age students, and then youth fare is free, and a lot of our youngsters don't have necessarily official ID. What do they need as far as proof? Because my understanding is that they can get some sort of a free pass through the school that they attend as well, like public school. These are kids that haven't graduated yet.
Yes, so we used to primarily do that through the schools, actually, but we recently changed it when we expanded that. So now all youth 18 and under ride for free. So if they're able to get a school ID, that would be the best way to show proof of age, because once you get to about middle school, you know, the drivers, they want to see some sort of verification, and they'll probably ask, so it is best to have one of those top cards if you can. Because you can board without having any payment, right, because it's free. But, yeah, it is best if they can use their school ID to get a CTRAN ID card at one of our offices.
Okay. And they can only get those through your office now, because my understanding was maybe a couple of years ago they're issued through the, like, the ASB office at the school if you could get one. So that's no longer in effect?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. I think some schools may still offer that, but primarily we're doing it through our sales offices, it seems. So I would contact the individual school to verify, or if you contact us, I can also follow up with you and verify that. But, yeah, I think it's mostly through our offices now.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I don't know if there's more questions, but thank you for being here. And I didn't hear, what is your role at CTRAN?
I'm the communications coordinator.
Any other questions for Kayla? Not seeing any. Thank you so much, and you are welcome to attend the rest of our meeting. The next piece is our family training series, and quite often CTRAN is a partner with us there, so you might want to find out what that's all about. And that information will be coming from Emily Harris.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I don't know if it's in the in-person room, but I'll do a quick introduction. I have a PowerPoint slide. I have the very good fortune to do a little intro to a couple of things that WISE is working on. So I'm going to work through that, but I'll just do a quick introduction. My name is Emily Harris. I'm a senior TA and training manager with an organization called WISE. We used to be the Washington Initiative for Supportive Employment, and we are a training and consulting organization that does work around employment equity for people with developmental disabilities, and that looks a lot of different ways. I'm wondering if the host could enable screen share on riffing here. That'd be helpful. Thank you. But I've had the very good fortune to work for WISE for the past 9 years, and then within my role, I get to do a lot of work in Clark County, which I'll share about. And then in my career, I've been doing work in Clark County for the past 16 years through various capacities. So I'm so pleased to be here with all of you tonight. Thanks for...
You should be able to share now, Emily.
I got it. Thank you. It's a perfect handoff. Thank you, Trish. So I'm going to just do a quick presentation here of a couple of different things that you had asked me to talk about, Trish, and I'm going to do the speed dating version of this, and then I'll give you information about how to ask them more information and contact me if you have questions or want more details. So I'm going to be talking about some of the recent collaborations and ongoing collaborations that WISE is doing with Clark County and other community partners. And one of them is the family training series, Susan, that you mentioned, as well as a person-centered family facilitator training that happened for educators in Clark County, and the ever-popular ongoing National Disability Awareness Celebration, and you get a check-in and call for committee members. So I'm wondering, it sounds like, I don't know if it's the mic that's unmuted, but I'm getting a little feedback. Is anyone else getting that?
And there are no mics in the room unmuted. I see all red.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. Maybe your personal computer or your, I don't think that's muted.
I'm sorry, was that directed at me?
Thank you. So recently, and for those
Emily, let me just check and make sure the room can still hear you, because I muted the computer.
Okay.
Yeah, can everybody in the room still hear?
Yes, we can still hear.
I got the thumbs up on the
screen. Oh, we did. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. I know, we've learned how to do virtual, we've learned how to, get back in person, and the hybrid model of, the little details, all the things that go into it. So, thanks everyone for making these moments happen for all of us.
No, it's set up the way it's supposed
to
be.
So, for those of you who came on at 5 to 5:15,
if I knew that many of none of us
might have heard a glimmer about this training, we were talking about how there's a long-standing history of Clark County sponsoring a person-centered planning facilitation workshop for educators. And Susan Cassidy was a long-standing partner and trainer in that, among other people in your community. But it was revived this year, and just happened recently. And for those of you who are not familiar with person-centered planning, it's a really beautiful, transformative process that is graphically facilitated, that looks at who a person is by gleaning information from the person and the people that know and love them to create a vision for a positive possible future. And this year, Clark County partnered with the ESD 112 to sponsor a training to help rebuild and reignite capacity for educators in your community to learn this process and implement it in the work that they're doing, but also create a drumbeat, a cohort, and capacity for people in the community to access other facilitators for the students that they work with. And so 13 folks from different districts in Clark County went through, as well as 5 people from Calhoun County and 1 person from Skamania. And on the screen, there's a visual graphic of one of the pages that was live plans that were facilitated as part of this workshop. So people got to, you know, practice it with different teams in the community, which is a really cool outcome. You get a snapshot of how it's really the different way of collecting information and supporting people to dream big. Another thing that is ongoing, and I'm like, COVID and the past 4 years has really jogged my memory in terms of time, so off the top of my head, I might have to lean on the Clark team for how long this series has been going on. It's been going on for at least 16 years, and I'm thinking over 20-something years. Trish, you have
I don't know exactly, but I'm thinking about 20 years that we've been doing this family training series.
We've been doing a family transition series since 1999. WISE came on after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah. So I can like, it's been ongoing and has been
25 years this year.
We should have a birthday party. Yeah?
That's right.
So I've had the good fortune to be connected to it when I used to work as an employment consultant, popping in for certain pieces of it. So that's a 16-year date. And then at WISE for the past 9 years. And just over the years, the training series, which is a partnership between Clark County, Peace, ESD, Evergreen, Camas, Battleground School District, I don't want to leave anyone out. Multiple community partners are helping to make these events happen. But they've really evolved over the past couple of years and taken different shapes and forms just with the switch to virtual and now back to kind of a hybrid in-person model where we're doing some workshops in person and some workshops are still online. And creating new ways for people to access the information. But it's really a series that's geared at providing information towards life after transition and you know, things that would be useful along the way. And it's a series that's for families and educators. And this year we, with the partnership with the committee and also really Peace taking on a big lead, started to do a workshop for students at all the in-person events, which has been really cool to see who shows up and thinking about, as a committee, how we can grow that and create kind of a, not a different lane, but a, I guess a congruent overlapping lane for students who are also showing up for these events. The next event is happening on March 19th. It's a virtual event. It's focused on guardianship and ABLE accounts and trust. So we can make sure before I leave, I'll put the link to that in the chat. And then just building on the great presentation about CTRAN and all the different community events that you are doing, CTRAN will be at the upcoming transition training series resource fair, happening on April 27th. It's happening at ESD 112, and I'll also put a link to our website where it has all of the community partners who will be at this event there. And this is an exciting thing, especially after the past 4 years being really virtual and not, and kind of expanding on how this event has looked in the past. So we'll report back, but hope to see you on the 27th. And if you're someone who is a family member or connected to family members or student educators, please get with me or get the flyers so we can help get the information out, because I think it'll be a really exciting and good event. And then finally, the last item that I've been asked to talk about is the celebration that Clark County puts on every year, which is the National, October is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, and every year Clark County throws a wedding, some people call it, but a big, huge celebration to celebrate and recognize employment diversity and excellence that's happening in Clark County. And we're back in the groove. Again, it was an event that was in person. I think before 2020, there was probably 200 and almost 300 people that were showing up to this event. And then it took a turn and went online for a couple of years. And then the past 2 years, we're back in person. So on the screen, you can see, I feel like this photo is just such a joyous photo. It's one of the winners from last year. It was the Small Employer Winner of the Year, Get to Gather Farms. And the owner is featured with the counselor, Sue Marshall, that I just feel like it kind of embodies the joy that happens at this event. And if you've been to the event or you're involved in the planning, you know that it's this really wonderful celebration. So we have a date picked for this year, and the date is October 9th, and it's going to happen at the same place as it did last year, which is Clark College. So if you have your calendar, your planner, your phone, save it, save the date. We hope to see you there, and additional information will come soon. But one of the exciting things about this event is that it's in partnership with the Developmental Disability Advisory Board. So there's a committee that's made up of some of you that are in this room and the Clark team, as well as WISE folks. So if you are interested in helping to plan the event this year, I'll make sure you have my contact, or if you've been on it in the past and you're coming back, you know how to find me. But I would love...
And don't you want to get people now?
Well, yeah.
If there are people that want to raise their hand, you can do that now, right?
Yes. If people want to raise their hand now, yeah.
They're not going to see you. You're just going to need to put your...
It sounds really lovely, and I want to think about it. You can email me. But, yeah. Oh, thank you, sir. And other than that, I'll pause and let people show their excitement or ask their questions. And put in the chat if you're interested in joining, or unmute and let me know your name.
Emily, this is Amy Campbell, and I would love to try and help out again this year. And I also think we should call out that CTRAN was a major sponsor last year, and we gave out CTRAN passes, and they're big popular things. So there's our connection. Both our guests connected.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Yes, that's a wonderful point. And thank you again to CTRAN for sponsoring many things.
Awesome.
In the chat. Susan, you'd also like to help. Okay, well, Susan, we couldn't do it without you. That's excellent. So Susan and Amy, wonderful. Anyone else? Bob, good.
Let's hang out.
I was going to slightly call on you, Bob, and be like, Bob, anyone else?
I'm panning to you. Go ahead and wave.
I can help.
And Emily, maybe?
This is Gabriela.
Was that?
Yeah. Gabriela, excellent.
Okay. It's because we look so little.
Well, I know. I recognize your face on my Zoom. I'm glad to see you wave. Wonderful.
And Emily, maybe you could just send an email to the rest of the advisory, like to the whole advisory board, you know, and say who volunteered tonight and see if there's anybody else that wanted to help, just for the people that aren't here tonight.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I will also send this out, as well as the link that I referenced to send out to everyone, and I will change the word excellent to excellence, because when I typed it up, that's what it said. other than that, though, are there any questions? I know I have a shorter amount of time, so I want to honor your agenda and the other things people have going on.
Thank you, Emily, for your time and sharing all the amazing information. And as a quick, there are no further questions. And so, Trish, you're going to speak about the recruitment committee.
Yes, mine should be really quick. We do have one open position on the advisory board right now. That posting, we've released a press release and sent it out broadly, and I've seen it pop up on other organizations, you know, newsletters and things. So thank you, Emily. Thanks for coming. See you next time. And so that position posting closes on March 20th. And so I'm looking for an advisory board member or two or so, or three, that would like to help me kind of review the applications. We've already received some applications, and I imagine we may receive more. I had a phone call today from another woman that's interested in applying. And so we'll just need to go through those applications and decide who we want to meet with, and, you know, ultimately make a recommendation about who to have join the advisory board. So are there volunteers for that? And this, well, I'll tell you what the time commitment is and what the benefit to you is as well. So I would imagine that we would meet as a group to look at applications one time. I would send those out, you know, in advance. So I'd imagine we'd get together for an hour to kind of review those applications together. And then depending on how many people y'all would like to interview, those interviews, we've typically done those at like 40 minutes, 30, 40 minutes each. We've done those virtually, and we've done all of the meetings virtually, you know, since the pandemic. But we could meet in person if the committee so desired to, you know, want to meet in person with people. We used to do that pre-pandemic. We met in person. Then we would be making a you know, have some discussion after the interviews. To make a recommendation to of who we should recommend that the county council appoints. This is a letter of recommendation that I send based on the advisory board committee's work, and then the county council really is the final say in who they would like to appoint to the advisory board.
You can count me in.
Trish, I wouldn't mind helping. Oh, sorry. This is Amy Campbell. I wouldn't mind helping either, but I do always have to say that usually my availability is in the, like, after 4 p.m. just because of work during the school year. So.
Sure.
And I appreciate that others are willing to volunteer. I can tell you that right now it's not a good time for me, but when we had, what, I think 4 or 5 positions open a few years ago, it was a really valuable experience to staff the search committee. So if people at all have an inclination to do it, I highly recommend it. You do get to know people, and there's all these really interesting organizations they're participating in the community. So anybody who can volunteer, I wholeheartedly encourage you to do it. I had a really meaningful experience last time around. I'm just not available to do it right now.
Thanks, Lori. I appreciate that. So it sounds like I've got Amy, Susan, and Bob. And then I will also send out an email just to see if there's any other advisory board members who would like to join. And Gabriella, right? No, Gabriella was on the National Disability Employment Awareness Month. I don't want to volunteer you for more.
I wish I could. I don't okay. have capacity to
That's
do
okay.
that right now.
That's fine. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it will be after the 20th, we'll be looking to schedule that time pretty quick and, you know, get it probably, you know, buttoned up within a month of that closing date. So thank you, Bob, Susan, Amy. I'll be in touch, and I will put something out to the rest of the advisory board to see if there's anybody else that would like to join us. Thank you so much.
Trisha, it's Kristen. I was going to ask the dates. I'm just trying to see if I'm going to be on vacation, but if it was going to be after March 25th, I'd be interested.
We can probably make that work. So I don't have any dates scheduled yet, so I'll reach out to those of you that have volunteered to coordinate that.
All right. Thank you, Kristen. And thank you, Trish, for that.
Before we move on to the next thing, can I just ask, I had sent a message to Jacqueline to add her name in the chat, and I didn't hear from her, so I'm just hoping that I can get full name and information to add you to the attendee list.
Is that Ted or Jacqueline? Maybe they stepped away. So
in the chat it says both.
Oh, it's both. Oh, hi, Ted. Hi, Jacqueline. Okay, great.
Welcome. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. All righty. Next agenda item is our legislative meeting that we had the opportunity to visit with a number of local representatives via Zoom or whatever that other one's called. I can't remember. The one that's really
our team.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So quickly I can forget. So would anybody like to offer any insights or impressions they received?
Cindy couldn't be here tonight, but I did receive an email from her that she asked that I read tonight, or I told her that I would read. So maybe I could start with that, and then if anybody else had any other things that they would like to share. And by the way, Cindy did share that she has not been able to make it to recent meetings due to a conflict that is resolving after tonight. So she will be back to joining the meetings regularly. So from City Morgan, here's my brief synopsis of the meetings with state reps. This being my first time and intro into meeting with state representatives, I was very excited to do so. This has also been a learning curve for me. With each state representative meeting I was able to join, it was hard for me to see only 15 minutes with which we had to share with the representative what we wanted them to know about our community and what key points we wanted them to support. I'm such a relational person that when it came to my turn to share the section I was assigned to share, thank you for putting that all together, I felt flustered and rushed, wanting to make sure that I made sense and shared what we wanted from my portion. I talk and facilitate for a living, so these feelings for me were something I'm not used to. While I know it is so necessary for us all to make sure our intellectual and developmental disability community needs are heard and hopefully met with the current bills in session, I have to say that convincing, quote-unquote, convincing some of the state reps, not all, to understand what I believe is just basic stuff about the value of people was a good challenge for me to live in the moment. In other words, this is a no-brainer, and yet this is why we're doing it, right? Overall, this was a great and new learning for me, and it is one of the many reasons I'm grateful to be on the DDAB Council with you all. From Sydney.
That was very nice. So what I would like to add to our meeting, and for those of you that didn't have an opportunity to attend, it's usually Trish or Kristen or Angela, somebody from the county, as well as Darla, help. And I just, you know, I thought the meetings I attended, and I think I attended quite a few of them, that the response was very positive. You know, just let me know what you need. And what was not surprising to me, but lovely to see, was how much they appreciate Darla. And, you know, Darla knows me. I mean, Darla is definitely got her pulse on what's going on up in Olympia and has cultivated relationships with people. And so it's kind of like, whatever Darla wants me to do, just let me know. And so that's great. That was one of my takeaways. Anybody else?
I'd like to add that I was amazed this year. We were limited to 15 minutes with just about every legislator, and yet everyone got their point through. It was very succinct. It was a really a fine-tuned machine as far as I'm concerned.
I'll add in, this is Amy Campbell. I want to echo everything Sydney said, and yes, Susan, it was awesome to hear that Darla is a rock star, but we kind of knew that. And it was interesting just to feel at first kind of like, how are we going to be able to make a difference in 15 minutes? But it also felt so good. Like, this was one of my favorite thing I've done with fellow board members, because I was like, yeah, I think we got out some stories, some experience, some asks, some information, and it was a good way for me to see how I think I walked away from those experiences excited to do more. And so while it was only a 15-minute meeting, I feel like it probably expanded my advocacy and interest.
Can I share?
Sure.
I just, you know, I sat in on most of those, and I just was really impressed with what a great job you guys all did this year. And really, I just sat there and listened, and you guys really carried that message forward, and you each got your message in that time frame, did the follow-up. I felt like it ran significantly smoother this year than it has in the past. And so I just wanted to share that from my perspective. I thought you guys did an excellent job.
One more final thought was, it was awesome to see how many board members participated in those short, sweet 15-minute meetings. That there were often more of us present than there were agenda items to share, but everybody still got a chance to let their voice heard, even though it wasn't very long. So the show, of course, that our board had was really great. Tremendous. Thank you all. Any other insights? Anybody want to share anything?
Just a comment that I want to make is that I just received an email today about the Washington State Association of Counties is asking the Association of County Human Services, which is the, you know, people that are like the county folks that do county human services, get together on a regular basis and do some advocacy that way. The Washington State Association of Counties has asked that we have our legislative agenda for next year done by the end of April. So, yeah, that's everybody's faces are the faces that I was making earlier. It seems really early. I don't have any more insight into why that is. I wanted to mention it here in case anybody else had insight into, I mean, it could have just been a choice that the counties, the Association of Counties are making to try to kind of get everything in order early and be able to move on it for, you know, preparing for next year's session. But I don't know. So anyway, I just wanted to put that out there. If, when I hear more information, I'll share with y'all about what that is about. And Darla, Hattie, if you all have any insights into that, let me know.
I don't have any insights, but your legislative agendas haven't varied that much in the last 10 to 15 years. So I think if we look historically at what they have been and then kind of make a projection, I think you guys will be okay to get that done by April. But yeah, that's really early.
Well, that's, I will say that that's not what this board needs to do. necessarily, right? Okay. Like, this is the Association of County Human Services that is working on getting their legislative agenda together sooner. So, I mean, I guess for us, what that means for us and for the advisory board is that we might want to be thinking about it sooner rather than later, because y'all might want to have influence into other agendas that are being developed. And I know y'all kind of listen to what's happening around the state and want to share information. So, you know, perhaps we look at bringing that to us, our next public meeting, to talk, to start talking about the legislative agenda.
Okay. Put in my two cents, if that's okay. And if you can hear me okay, I had to switch headphones. My gut feeling on this is probably because this is an election year and there is a lot of seats up for grabs, that maybe having that legislative priority done so early, the counties can go forward with a very concise message across the state saying, like, this is what we need, these are our priorities. Will you be a champion for this as people run for the legislature? That's my best guess.
And on that note, just a reminder, Hattie will be hosting, well, I guess all of us will be, but Hattie will lead on our candidates forum this year. And it will be in person again, so.
So everyone who wants more than 15 minutes with our electeds, now's the time, because they're really, really nice when they're campaigning. They'll give you all the time in the world.
Madam Chair, maybe we want to have
that over. Okay. Any other insights into why our legislative agenda priorities might be available by the next time we have a meeting? Or actually before that. Okay, we are going to move on. So Hattie, it's your turn to share our legislative update. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I will do my best. I have a very small laptop screen, and I'm going to be toggling between a few screens. So if somebody has a question, please just say, I have a question, or if somebody could let me know, because I'm not going to be able to see hands up.
Abby, do you want me to share the what you sent me earlier? Would that be helpful? Or
if you'd like to, I had a plan to go through line by line. I do have...
Go ahead.
Here's what I'll do. I will put the link in the chat for anybody that would like to see them, and then maybe somebody that is in the in-person room, if you could share them. I'm not sure what the setup is there, so...
Is it the same thing that Trish was offering to share?
Yeah.
And we will update these, so we put them on the website tomorrow with the recording of the meeting, so it'll all be there for y'all to peruse at your leisure.
And session does end technically tomorrow, which is March 7th, and these that I sent are updated kind of in, not in real time, but they are things that will be updated as we finish session out tomorrow. So if anything goes haywire or anything gets added last minute, it will be added on to both of these. So this one that is pulled up right now, this is the bills of interest. For those of you that were here in January as well as in November, this page used to be like 7 pages long, and now I think we are down to, 2 potentially? And these are all of the bills that were passed during the short session. A few that I had highlighted were... So, a few bills that I have highlighted that I thought you all might be interested in is one is Senate Bill 85, or I'm sorry, 5882, which is the burden of proof, and that's concerning the burden of proof in special education due process hearings. Up until now, the burden of proof was put on the families if they were wanting to, or not wanting, nobody wants to have a due process hearing, but if they were forced to go into a due process hearing, all that financial responsibility was falling on the families. And now it is being shifted back to the schools. House Bill 1916, so that was the funding for EFIT, and that just kind of corrects a funding delay for the agencies that are providing ESIP services. House Bill 2116 increases the special education funding cap from 15% to 16%, so not a huge increase, but it definitely is going to give a little bit more breathing room for some of the school districts. Gosh. Once we get into the added letter, so it's in growth, third substitute house bill, so E3SHB 1541 is the Nothing About Us Without Us, and that created the Nothing About Us Without Us Act, which has been brought forward many, many years, and it basically is adding people to the tables that should, that are having conversations about them. This year, I think the reason that it passed was instead of just being about people with developmental disabilities being asked to be stakeholders at the table, is that it included everyone. So it, so like I said, it wasn't just people with disabilities. They were partnering with the farmers. So when they're making decisions about land use and the native tribes and the fishermen and the fire and basically, you know, being inclusive, how we should be, and making sure that no decisions are being made about people without their knowledge or without their lived experiences. And then the last one I highlighted was,
can I just make a comment about that, the Nothing About Us Without Us bill? This was also one that was, was started by self-advocates, but was also championed by communities of color as well. And I think that, the work the self-advocates did to reach out and, obviously this was a message that really resonated with a lot of different communities. And this is, I think, a huge win that we should all be celebrating, that, to have people represented on these work groups that can potentially, that do impact their lives, right? I mean, I think that years from now we'll look back on this and go, like, we had to pass a law for that, like, why weren't we doing that before? So, anyway, that's a good one.
Absolutely. The self-advocates did a tremendous job with this one. They had really championed this for years, I would say. This was my seventh session, and I think the first year that I did legislative session with PEACE was the first year that they had dropped this bill. And they really took it from all sides and found what they needed to do to get this passed. And they did fabulous. This last one that I had highlighted here is SJM 8007. I'm sorry, I don't know what the SJM stands for. I didn't have time to look that up. So if anybody else might know, that would be useful information. But it is requesting Congress to fund 40% of the IDEA cost. Originally, that was Congress's promise to the states, was that they were going to, fund 40% of special education federally. And I think the last number I heard was covering somewhere around 17%. So that's really not even close. there any questions about those, or maybe any else that are on here that about to any of you?
This is Amy Campbell. I'll add one of the education ones that stood out to me as a teacher who serves students with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It is important that I have a robust classified staff who are highly capable and fairly compensated. And so ESP pay was obviously talked about a lot in session, and the bill that OSPI proposed that would increase pay for paras did not pass. But we did get a bill through that modifies the prototypical school model to increase the staffing ratio for ESPs within our schools, and should put, I think they said, $60 million worth of additional funding to support the employment of classified staff. It doesn't necessarily obviously mean a one-to-one ratio, like money coming in means a certain number of paras, but it's more complicated than all of that. But it is money allocated for classified staff employment, and those supports in schools are so important. So I was really excited to see that, and I think it's a step in the right direction for getting adequate supports in our public education systems.
Yes, I completely agree. I think that is an absolute right step in that direction, and the minimal increase in the safety net funding will also help with the support staff, as well as hiring the specialists like OTs, PTs, all those other P's that the schools use. Susan, did you have a question about the same kind that
it was related to what Amy shared? So great minds to collect. Yeah.
For those of you who I don't know, the education stuff is really where my passion lies. I think I have a son that's 13, and he's part of it right now. So, yeah. That was that. And then the next part is the operating budget, which I'll give.
Was that helpful for you guys to see, or should I? Do you want to pull it up again?
Remember, it is sharing the screen a moment.
No, that's why I was
standing
up.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why I was standing up.
Thank you. So the operating budget, the final one we produced was this afternoon. So I've done my best to go over this here. I'm going to the top and I keep going back to the bottom. Trish, would you want to just scroll through this slowly so people can read it a little bit and see if we see something we can stop and chat about it. But while you're looking at that, I'm going to find my computer.
Can I go over some of the highlights?
Yes, Scarlett, please.
Okay. There was funding that was allocated to increase the number of case managers through DDA. So our case manager caseload will drop from 75 per case manager down to 66. I think nationally the typical range is in the 30s to 40s, so we're still have heavy caseloads. We got $19 million that went to the Housing Trust Fund. The bill that had been the REIT bill last year, we got the new bill this year, was necessary to implement the budget. The bill did not get through, but they did put significantly more in the Housing Trust Fund than they typically do.
And in addition to that, they funded 6 individual housing projects across the state. I don't think we have any of those down here, but that's good that they did do that. There was a slight increase for some things. There is some funding to do some studies for things like the day habilitation that was put on there. There was actually, I always cringe a little bit, and I see as many studies funded as what they funded this year, but they funded quite a few of the studies. Bill to, and the funding to save the documents out at Lakeland Village passed, so that's good. Trying to think what else. Supported living got a slight increase. I don't, can you see where employment or treaty, do you know where employment ended up? Didn't they get a slight increase as well? Can't remember if it went all the way through.
No.
No, it didn't.
It didn't
okay.
go through. And we were kind of, had heard that that might not, I don't think, let me see here. I mean, on here it's not. So,
right.
Yeah, unless it is wrong. But we kind of had a feeling that it wouldn't, just because it wasn't included in the governor's budget. And there has been a lot of work behind the scenes about this because, you know, what we're hearing is that DDA is taking money from employment to fill a budget hole. And so, you know, while advocates are asking for more money to fund the rate study to increase rate, like, because that hasn't been fully funded, that there's money coming out to fill other needs. So hopefully they'll be able to come up with some resolution to that. I know that there's a lot of work being done on that. So more to come on that.
There was also money, and I'm happy if you can figure out where it's at on there and pull it up. I don't remember the dollar amount, but there was money set aside to create a children's residential home Erie complex.
Yeah.
And so, depending upon who you ask, some people are referring to that as a child institution. Other people are saying this is an opportunity for us to get the kids out of the hospitals and the kids that we have shipped into other states back into our state. You could argue either side of it. But it was funded, and it's funded with state-only dollars. So it's got some federal funding. Originally, it was supposed to be state-only dollars. So I'm glad they put some federal funding in there because CMS will oversee it. If it's state-only dollars, CMS doesn't have their hands in it, and they're not overseeing it. So we want CMS to be watching closely.
Well, and it's not very much federal money.
No, it's not.
It's like a full match, but that's interesting. And, you know, I just think that this is something to kind of keep an eye on because, you know, as we think about services in the community and what families say that they need, you know, that there are in our community who experience crisis, and I think that what the advisory board and others have talked about is having local resources to be able to support those families.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is great for that community, and maybe we may or may not want a 12-bed situation, but definitely there's so there is a need for crisis support, and typically we've talked about that as wanting to have that in local communities, not to have to ship people off to.
Right, and my understanding is that these are kids that typically have been with DCYF, and they're getting transferred from DCYF over to DDA. So, and they're getting transferred back into the state, DDA is going to be taking them. And so these aren't necessarily the kids that are in crisis, right? Well, they're in crisis, so they wouldn't be out of state. But these are going to be open beds that we could use as crisis stabilization, unfortunately.
Because it's going to be full as soon as it opens, is that right?
Yeah, there's already 10 of them accounted. 10 of the 12 are full already. Yeah. Starting July 1.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said any other things that you wanted to pull out?
I'm not posted on our website for y'all as well. We'll get it posted tomorrow so that you can look through it.
And then not specifically the budget. I got so excited to look at that and then my computer is not working with me. I did highlight a few bills that we had chatted about before that did not pass, that I think that will probably be brought back in the 2025 session. One is the paying parents of minors with developmental disabilities that had a lot of momentum at first, and then unfortunately it just didn't have enough steam to make it to the end. All of the restraint and isolation bills were not either, and then Darla got up the rehabilitation, that one also did not pass, as well as four other pages. But like I said, it was a short session. I think we did get a lot from what we typically do during these shorter sessions, and I have a lot of hope going into next year. There was a lot of great relationships built and maintained, and I am excited to chat with you all and our legislators and legislators to maybe be the candidate during the interim. Oh, thank you. The Senate joint more. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Hattie. I know that's a lot of information to try to browse through and digest, but you're doing an excellent job. And so just real quick before we adjourn our meeting, kind of a last minute, Trish and I were speaking before the meeting officially started, and our next DDAB meeting is scheduled to be April 3rd. And it would be a work session with Wally. And it's also spring break in Southwest Washington. And so I'm not sure Lori or Amy or any of you with school age children, how that would affect your ability to attend a meeting.
I'll be in Florida.
So we'll be at opposite ends of the time zone. I'm going to be in Hawaii. the question is, do we want to go ahead and plan to have a work group meeting knowing that a couple people probably won't be present, or do we want to just forego an April meeting?
So I have to be really clear. April is like the worst month. We call it Hateful in the Academy because everybody loses it a little bit. Last full month before the contract ends in May. That said, depending upon when it is and where it is, I would do my level best. But again, I can defer to the group and do my best to track. So I'll just say that and see the floor.
Okay, anybody else?
And since this is a work session, we can probably take a seat down to see what the rest of the advisory board thinks as well. And I would suggest that it sounds like if we do try to change the April, I would
that's kind of the direction I'm leading, but that's from my own personal because I can't. Yeah, it would be a challenge to attend the April worker meeting. But I'm going to
kind of survey the group and see where everybody is.
Yes.
I'm trying to get my video to come on, and good luck with that. So I don't want to miss the last session with Wally, because I've really gotten a lot out of him, and thank you, Trish, for bringing him to our group. Is it possible, were we scheduled to meet with Wally?
Yeah, we were scheduled to meet with Wally in April, and what we would probably do is just look at extending. So we would meet with him instead of April. We'd probably see if we could meet with him in June and then August.
Okay.
So. I know that you said you're sending an email, but I would appreciate that because I echo Lori that I would love to be at the last session. Like, I'll do whatever the group says or would prefer to do, and I will try and join remotely, but I want to be at the Wally meeting. Please.
We can check in with Wally too to see if his calendar would allow us to change our minds on him. But I think he's a pretty flexible guy. Okay, for mentioning that, because Wally's further on my mind right now. So thank you for putting that on there. Worst comes to worst, maybe I could do it in April, but if you could, or if whoever's communicating with Wally could stress that everybody really has gotten a lot out of what you're doing and we just can't do April. Is there any way maybe we can appeal to his sense of humanity?
We can probably work with
him. Okay, thank you.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, everyone. I officially declare our meeting adjourned. Have a lovely